WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After Ian Frazier's parents died, he hoped to find a meaning that would defeat their death. He hunted for that meaning in the objects they saved, an old hymnal, a black mesh hat veil, photographs, and letters. He hoped that by tracing each object to its source, he could find a larger meaning. He took on the mission of finding a narrative that linked together the objects his parents had saved and to link that narrative to the larger story of American history. The result is his book, Family. It was number 4 on Time magazine's list of the best books of 1994. I spoke with Frazier last fall when the book was published. Frazier is a regular contributor to The New Yorker and the author of Dating Your Mom and The Great Plains. When he started collecting his parents' possessions, he divided them into boxes, which he labeled the Dad Museum and the Mom Museum. Suddenly he was a curator, but he had no training for this job.
I didn't know what was of value and what wasn't. I was sort of an archaeologist without any sort of direction. I just had all this stuff, and I regarded it all as artifacts, and I tried to make sense of what it was. And sometimes, after looking at something for a really long time, I would conclude that there wasn't any meaning to it really at all, except that someone had forgotten to throw it away. Other times, an object would expand in meaning and practically take over all the other meanings. So I felt the responsibility of an archaeologist or maybe a paleontologist putting something together from just a few fragments.
What kinds of things had your parents saved?
Oh, just everything. My father's meal ticket from Boys State in Columbus, Ohio in 1934. Why save the meal ticket? There were 28 out of 30 punches were punched, and two weren't. All kinds of things, programs from plays that they had seen or had been in, lots and lots of letters, as I say in the book, just a cache of letters. Going back, in some cases, there were letters that went back into the 19th century. I think the earliest actual letter that I had went back to 1855, was written in 1855. And just strange things, you know, purses. My mother saved every purse for some reason, never threw out a purse. And I was able to trace the history of purses in America from 1945 to 1988 just by lining these purses up on the floor.
Your family was part of some of the major movements in American history, the move west, the Civil War. Your great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather.
Right, two greats.
Charlie Wickham became the second in command of the 55th Regiment?
That's right, the 55th Ohio Volunteer Infantry, which I read the book about the 55th, which was written in the early, in 1904, and I became so involved in this regiment. They were all guys from the Norwalk area, Norwalk, Ohio. And it was sort of a hometown regiment, and I got to feel that I knew all these guys. And when you see somebody, kind of a small-town kid, who suddenly finds himself in this unbelievable war, it was just fascinating to me. And it was also fascinating, I think, because of what those guys did. They were, many of them, very idealistic. And they truly suffered for 5 years. I can't imagine that type of suffering. And at the end, they had changed the country. They had actually done something with this suffering, and the country had done something with the suffering that it went through. And I think when you look at the country and you think, how will we ever fix all of these disastrous problems that we seem to have, and you realize we have fixed problems. We have fixed problems in the past. And so somehow it was a very hopeful saga for me to follow the Civil War.
Your great-great-grandfather survived the Battle of Chancellorsville.
Right.
This is a battle where the Union troops lost about 17,000 killed, wounded, or captured, and the Confederates about 13,000. This was just a couple of months before Gettysburg. But you write that by the time you were born, the deeds of the 55th had been forgotten. How did that make you feel to think about that? How all of that had been forgotten, something so cataclysmic, and you were born and never gave it a thought until you started investigating your family history?
I thought it should be remembered. I thought it should be revived as something people know about. The people who were born after the Civil War, I think, had had enough of it, enough of hearing about it. Just like maybe people my age got a little sick of hearing about the Depression. And I think that they assisted in forgetting it. It was just the way that you don't want to hear something from your parents all the time. I think they got a little sick of it. And when I read about the 55th and when I read about what the regiment had done in the war, it helped me to understand where I grew up a lot more, because I could see that there was a certain optimism and a certain dedication to the American idea that came from this, from their participation in the war. So also the war was just really an amazing event, and there are people who get fascinated by it, and I'm one of those people, sort of a buff.
My guest is Ian Fraser. His new book is a family history called Family. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Ian Fraser, the author of a new family history called Family. Now, where did your search for your family history take you? And what are some of the things that you did during that search that were really out of character for you?
Well, it took me mainly to small towns in the Midwest and in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, places like that. It took me also to the coasts, east and west, because most of my family has dispersed from the middle of the country to the edges, again, following a population pattern that was big and has been big in recent times. So I went all over little towns, and what was the most out-of-character thing I did? I suppose, for me at the time, really thinking a lot about religion, it just hadn't been part of my consciousness, really. And to read these books from the 19th century where people are disputing rather small points of Protestant belief and practice, it was sort of a mind-bending experience to try and figure out, you know, exactly what the difference between, say, the New School Presbyterians and the Old School Presbyterians, a distinction now lost, but in 1825, very important. That it was stuff like that was really kind of confusing and hard to follow.
Yeah, well, you're right, you come from a long line of Protestants, but the portion of doubt increased down the generations. I guess you're part of the generation that has plenty of doubt.
Oh, yeah, doubt is the new religion, I guess, or it's the new standard of something that you can count on everybody pretty much having inside them, and doubt sort of has a public persona of irony, and irony is the lingua franca of people that, of many, many people, and to me, irony gets kind of old after a while, and I just wanted to see what it was like to be in this different frame of mind where doubt might perhaps be quite a bit smaller, where your faith was very strong.
You also reflect on how your ancestors rarely married outside their denomination, mm-hmm. but in your generation, everyone in your family seems to be marrying outside.
Right.
Spouses, people have married spouses who are Catholic, Jewish, Italian, Greek, African. Same faith marriages in your family now are the exception. Do you feel that that's good or bad or neutral or just a, you know, sign of the times?
Well, I think it's very good. I like it. I like variety, and I grew up, I think, in a situation where I craved more variety. So I think it's, you know, I think it's really great. It's also historically part of what happened in this century, which is the ecumenical movement, that is people sort of concentrating on what made them the same rather than what made them different. And I often felt like when I was reading 19th century newspapers, my ancestors edited the newspaper in Norwalk, Ohio, and a 19th century paper in a small town in Ohio, if a strange person came to town, there would be a little parenthesis after identifying that person by race or religion. So it would say, you know, John Martinelli, parenthesis, Italian, was in town last week for such a... Well, or, you know, Moses Smith, parenthesis, colored. Well, sometimes I would get out of the 19th century when I'd been doing really deep research. I would get out of it and return to this century with just the feeling of the greatest relief, that there's something really claustrophobic about the culture of that time. And I prefer my own time. That's the kind of irony of it, I guess, is that I envy their faith, but I prefer my time.
My guest is Ian Fraser, and he's written a family history called Family. As you wrote in your book, your whole search for family history was about trying to find a meaning that would defeat death, particularly that would defeat the death of your parents and your brother. I'd like to ask you to read a paragraph from the end of the book that has to do with whether you found that meaning or not.
My parents would accompany me through a life that would be much like theirs, and at every step, I would compare myself, especially to him, my father, would judge if I was doing better or worse than he had done at being middle class and putting kids through school and not terrorizing my family and staying between the lines while trying not to forget what it is I actually want to do. And unknown things would happen, and sooner or later I would die too. I understood that now, clearly, the way you suddenly become aware of the sky and the diving board after the person in front of you has jumped. And my kids perhaps would see me off as I had seen my parents off, or perhaps not. And soon all the people who had accompanied me through life would be gone too, and then even the people who had known us, and no one would remain on earth who had ever seen us, and those descended from us perhaps would know stories about us, perhaps once in a while they would pass by buildings where we had lived, and they would mention that we had lived there. And then the stories would fade, and our graves would go untended, and the graves of those who had tended ours would go untended, and no one would guess what it had been like to wake before dawn in our breath-warmed bedrooms as the radiators clanked and our wives and husbands and children slept. And we would move from the nearer regions of the dead who are remembered into the farther regions of the forgotten and on past those into a space as white and big as the sky replicated forever. And all that would remain would be the love bravely expressed, and the moment when you danced, and your heart danced with you.
It's a really beautiful, beautiful paragraph. You know, sometimes when people do their family history, what they really want is a sense of identity, a better sense of who they are,
mm-hmm.
and how they got to be who they are. Was that an issue for you?
Yeah, I think it definitely was. I think I wanted to stop any kind of slide toward forgetting. I felt like there are people who forget in every generation, and they're important. You have to have people who forget and people who throw away. Those are people who, they start fresh, and you got to start fresh all the time. But somebody's got to save and somebody's got to remember. And I feel like I remembered enough to hold us for a while and to kind of get an idea of what it was like to invent oneself here. I mean, America was just self-invention from the beginning. And this is, in a way, it's a history of an identity as it changed from sort of the founding of the country until today.
Now that your book is finished, what are you doing with your mom and dad museums?
Well, they're just still in my office. I don't know what I'll do with them. I suppose I'll just put them somewhere and keep them. And I imagine my children will not have the courage to throw them out, although I can't quite promise that. But eventually some Genghis Khan in the line will throw everything into the flames.
So you've got the stuff just in boxes?
Yeah, it's in my office. Yeah, and it's just, and I open it up sometimes, and it's all just the same stuff. I mean, looking at it and writing it down in notebooks and labeling it and everything, and it's still the same. Yeah, I mean, I didn't kind of take the magic or the energy or whatever inhabits those boxes, still inhabits it. And when you look at it, you can still get a feeling for the people who wrote these letters or who saved these things.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, you're welcome.
Ian Fraser is author of the new book, Family. This is Fresh Air.